Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is William Federer, and we're talking about the faith of FDR. And, of course, how deeply he felt the things, I don't know, but he was saying what the American people believed at that time, and a good politician always reflects the beliefs of the populace. He's going to say what they believe. And, you know, back in the 1930s and 1940s, everyone knew that America was a Christian nation. And the vast majority of our people were dedicated in their Christian beliefs. And everybody in the world knew that America was a Christian nation. How different it has become today. But I think that the beliefs of the people are reflected very, very clearly in the statements of FDR. So why don't you pick up the amazing statements that you've been able to find in his collected works and papers?
Well, one of the things I have come to the conclusion is that political rhetoric is the lowest common denominator. In other words, politicians say things to appeal to the largest number of voters. And so for FDR to make some statements such as he does reflect that the population was far more Christian than it is today. Here, for example, is his Labor Day address, September 1st of 1941. FDR says, "The preservation of these rights is vitally important to us, not only those who enjoy them, but to the whole future of Christian civilization." Imagine if President Bush said, "The preservation of our rights is vital to the whole future of Christian civilization." The ACLU would say, "What's that?" Here's another quote. This was from a campaign address, November 1st, 1940, in Brooklyn, New York. He's talking about the Nazis, and FDR says, "Those forces hate democracy and Christianity as two phases of the same civilization. They oppose democracy because it is Christian. They oppose Christianity because it preaches democracy." Talking about the ideological war that we're in today over beliefs, in particular the what's left of the Judeo-Christian belief system and the Islamic one that's coming on strong, here was a campaign address at Madison Square Garden, October 28, 1940, Franklin Roosevelt said, "We guard ourselves against all evils, spiritual as well as material, which may beset us. We guard against the forces of anti-Christian aggression, which may attack us from without, and the forces of ignorance and fear, which corrupt us from within." And if you can imagine today, President Bush saying, "We're guarding against anti-Christian aggression." Well, gee, we don't have to have somebody attacking us. We have the ACLU attacking us with anti-Christian aggression right here inside of our country. A few others that I found interesting.
Why don't you hold that? We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is William Federer, and we're basically talking about his book, The Faith of FDR. And Bill has went through all the papers and so many of the writings of FDR and the speeches he'd given. And you can see this, the reflection of the Christian attitude of the American people at that time. How different that is today than George Bush's second inaugural address. We talked about how character is built upon the writings of found at Mount Sinai, the Ten Commandments, and the writings of the Quran, and the faith of the other peoples of our nation. Wait a minute, what does this have to do with America? The Quran and the faiths of the other people, and of course, what they're really doing is trying to make us a cultural society, a multi-religious society. But, you know, back in the 1930s when FDR was writing, he would never think about bringing up the Quran, or we all worship the same God, or Allah is just like the God of the Bible. They're all one big happy family. Everybody knew, 70 years ago, America was a Christian nation. So pick the story up there, Bill. You've got some wonderful quotations.
Well, speaking about, the Quran versus the Bible, here's what Franklin Roosevelt said in 1935, October 6th, at the 400th anniversary of the printing of the English Bible. First of all, just the very fact that this would warrant a presidential address shows that things were different back then. But Franklin Roosevelt said, "We cannot read the history of our rise and development as a nation without reckoning the place the Bible has occupied in shaping the advances of the Republic. Where we have been the truest and most consistent in obeying its precepts, we have attained the greatest measure of contentment and prosperity." So he's talking about us sticking with the precepts of the Bible. And then, in a fireside chat on March 9th, 1937, Franklin Roosevelt said, "I hope that you have reread the Constitution of the United States. Like the Bible, it ought to be read again and again." And I just love these things because, again, this is the patron saint of the left saying things that are so far to the right that even Bush couldn't say these nowadays. And here's a few more just mentioning the term Christian. FDR met with Stalin and Khrushchev, and Churchill for the Yalta conference, and unfortunately it was just a few months, two months before he died, not even that much. And so FDR was not a good negotiator. That's saying it nicely, but in actual fact, he gave in to Stalin and surrendered Eastern Europe to control of the communists, which for 70 years was a horrible, horrible mistake. I guess it was however many years from the Yalta Conference in 45 to when the Berlin Wall fell, but still, this is what FDR said. He said, "I have read about Warsaw and Lidice, L-I-D-I-C-E, but he said, I saw Sevastopol in Yalta, where, of course, the Nazis killed 500,000 Russians. And FDR continues, "And I know that there is not room enough on earth for both German militarism and Christian decency." Again, you wouldn't hear somebody talking about Christian decency today. And then when Christmas time came around, in 1942, in his Christmas address, Franklin Roosevelt said, "It is significant that tomorrow, Christmas Day, our plants and factories will be stilled. This is not true for other holidays that we are accustomed to celebrate. On all other holidays, work goes on gladly for winning the war. So Christmas becomes the only holiday in all the year." It just seems that today, Dr. Stan, every Christmas you see more and more assault by the left wanting to get rid of Christmas, changing it to winter parties and holidays and solstice celebrations and anything but Christmas. Here's another Christmas address in 1944, right there in the midst of the war, December 24th, Franklin Roosevelt said, "We will celebrate this Christmas Day in our traditional American way because of its deep spiritual meaning, because the teachings of Christ are fundamental in our lives, because we want the youngest generation to grow up knowing the significance of this tradition and the story of the coming of the immortal Prince of Peace." FDR was one to celebrate Christmas and not all these Kwanzas and these other made-up things. But just the terms, like he used that term, Prince of Peace. He spoke in a number of different venues where he would make reference. For example, his annual message to Congress, January 4th, 1939, Franklin Roosevelt said, "An ordering of society which relegates religion to the background can find no place within it for the ideals of the Prince of Peace. The United States rejects such an ordering and retains its ancient faith." So he refers to the Prince of Peace. And then in a address to the Archbishop of New Orleans, in October 1st, 1938, Franklin Roosevelt said, "I doubt if there is any problem in the world today which would not find happy solution if we approached it in the spirit of the Sermon on the Mount." And of course, that was Jesus, where he gave the Beatitudes and said, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." FDR continues, "May your prayers hasten the day when both men and nations will bring their lives into conformity with the teachings of Him who is the way, the light, and the truth." Again, referring to Jesus. But there's just page after page. I put these all into a book, Dr. Stan. It's a 400-page book of quotes from FDR in chronological order. You know, first administration, second administration, third administration, and then the fourth administration, which he died just a few months into. But here's another one. In a radio address in 1941, FDR said, "The whole world is divided between human slavery and human freedom, between pagan brutality and the Christian ideal. We choose human freedom, which is the Christian ideal." And again, I'm just tickled to think that here is Franklin Roosevelt, who's the icon of the left, and to see that he is, again, saying things that are so conservative that a Republican or a conservative candidate would be taken to the woodshed for by the liberal media if they would mention something like this. But the media was nice to FDR. He was able to say these things and much else. In a fireside chat in 1942, April 28th, FDR said, "The great war effort must be carried through to its victorious conclusion. It shall not be imperiled by a handful of noisy traitors, betrayers of America, betrayers of Christianity itself, would-be dictators who in their heart and soul have yielded to Hitlerism and would have this republic do likewise." And so he refers to these people that betray America as betrayers of Christianity itself. Another address, this was at Bridgeport, Connecticut. It was a campaign address, November 4th of 44. I think it was the day before the election. But he says, "In this campaign, of course, all things taken together, I can't talk about my opponent the way I would like to sometimes, because I try to think that I'm a Christian. I try to think that someday I will go to heaven. And I don't believe there is anything to be gained by saying dreadful things about any other people in a campaign." And but Dr. Stan, it's amazing how times have changed, and our country has such a short memory that we could go from this type of rhetoric, which again, I like to say that political rhetoric is the lowest common denominator. In other words, politicians want to say things that can appeal to the broadest mass of voters. You know, you don't want to say things that'll turn off voters, but the fact that he would say over and over and over again these Christian references shows that the majority of the populace agreed with that.
And, you know, I think the amazing thing is, Bill, that the majority of the populace today, you know, is Christian, whether we be Catholic, whether we be Protestant. But, you know, we make up at least 70% of the country, and there are probably another 10%. That, as many as 80% of the people, you know, consider themselves Christian. Now, there may be some little aberrant forms of Christian. 90% of the people believe in God. There's only a very, very few people on the other side. But they hate Christianity with an intensity, and they're doing everything they can to destroy it. And that, of course, is the people in the ACLU or the Anti-Defamation League and the B'nai B'rith that don't represent the Jewish faith at all, because many Jews realize this is a Christian nation and that their security comes from the fact it remains a Christian nation. If it ever loses the Christian foundations, why, the Jews will be driven out of this, as they have through so many other countries. So we do have some extremist radical groups that pretend to be, you know, representing the Jewish people, and I think are doing everything they can to do more harm than good. So, but I think that, you know, we are still a Christian nation. It's just that nobody has the courage, other than you, of course, to stand up and say that.
Well, you know, it's and it's true. The Christians have been the strongest friends of the Jewish race in Israel. Yes, it is annoying to them to have Christians want to convert them, but they are coming to the realization that it's better to have Christians trying to convert you with love than Muslims trying to simply kill you. they're not trying to convert Jews to Islam. They're trying to just kill them. And and bringing that situation up is this analogy, this comparison of FDR fighting Nazi terrorism against Jews with the Islamic terrorism against Jews today. And some of these quotations I just can't help but make reference to. One of them where he's talking about their insane desires. This is what FDR said June 12th of 44. He says, "This nation is appalled at the systematic persecution of the Jews by the Nazis." He says that their insane desire to wipe out the Jewish race in Europe continues undiminished. The Nazis are determined to complete their program of mass extermination. And that, just that term, wipe out the Jewish race, sounds like the president of Iran, who recently said he wanted to wipe the Jews out of the whole Middle East.
Not only that, but he wanted to wipe them off the face of the earth, and then he relented a little bit, just said send them all off to Europe. So obviously we have a man in command of Iran who has an entirely different worldview, and a very dangerous worldview, incidentally, at this time in history. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is William Federer, and we're talking about his book, The Faith of FDR. So go ahead and pick up the story, Bill.
Another one of his quotes, March 24th, 1944, Franklin Roosevelt wrote this. He says, "In one of the blackest crimes in all history, the Nazis' wholesale systematic murder of Jews in Europe goes on unabated every hour. Hundreds of thousands of Jews are now threatened with annihilation as Hitler's forces descend. That these innocent people, who have already provided a decade, survived a decade of Hitler's fury, should perish would be a major tragedy." And
what is he writing that, Bill?
That was of March 24th of 1944.
All right, so this was shortly before then he died.
And my father-in-law was a B-17 pilot, and he flew 35 missions over Germany and France and Czechoslovakia, and you know, blew up ball bearing plants and tells the stories. His plane was in the same squadron as the Memphis Belle, the one they did the movie about. And he talks about after the war was over, he had to fly the prisoners out of the different prison camps, and he had gone to Auschwitz and saw the piles of bodies and saw the emaciated bodies alongside the road that the Nazis were trying to march out before the Allies came to try to, I guess, you know, hide their dirty deeds. But these prisoners were so weak that they collapsed, and so they just machine gunned them to death right there in the ditch. And I mean, he told my wife, you know, after he told me the stories, he says, you know, "Please ask Bill not to ask me those questions because I have nightmares about it for a week." And for the president of Iran to say, "Well, the Holocaust didn't happen," and that it was just a made-up story, is just another sign of how they don't care about history. They're just manipulating it for their own ends. And you know, one of the things I in reading through history, you see the there's actually several different views of history. One is the Judeo-Christian one, is that it's a timeline. It's linear, where there are prophecies made and prophecies fulfilled, and ultimately the whole thing is going to wrap up. You know, there's the animist religion, the native type of religion, where it's a circle of life, you know, like the Disney movie, you know, and everything just keeps going around and around. And there's the Nazi and the communist view of history. In other words, since there is no God and there's no eternal life, there is no absolute truth, and therefore history can be manipulated to achieve a desired agenda. And that's what we've been seeing in America with the school systems, but also internationally, and also with this president of Iran, that they see that history is something that can be manipulated to achieve an agenda, whether that means trying to say all of our founders were deists, which they were not, because the a classic deist is somebody that believes God created the laws of nature and left. Well, you can't read any, and I read through all of George Washington's orders to his troops, his addresses as president, and he's constantly talking about the hand of providence intervening in the course of the war, that he must be worse than an infidel that lacks faith, and that when Benedict Arnold's betrayal was discovered, Washington said that this discovery gives proof that the liberties of America are under the special protection of a divine providence.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment with Bill Federer. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bill Federer, and he was just talking about George Washington. And George Washington's writing, which were strongly Christian, and he was even talking about Benedict Arnold. Pick up the story there, Bill, about certainly about George Washington's Christian beliefs.
Well, he talked about God intervening, and a deist does not believe God intervenes. A deist believes that God wound up the clock and set it on the table and then walked away, you know, that God created the laws of nature and then left. Even Ben Franklin, who was one of the more liberal of the founders, called for prayer at the Constitutional Convention. And he said, "We have observed during our contest with Great Britain numerous instances of divine intervention in the course of the war. And have we forgotten such a great friend, or do we imagine we no longer need his assistance? And he said, I beg leave that henceforth prayers imploring the assistance of heaven be offered in this assembly every morning before we proceed to business, or we'll be no more successful than the builders of the Tower of Babel, you know. So our founders were not deists, but yet they try to rewrite history and put words in their mouth that weren't there. And they did the same thing, with the recent history. But that's why I like going back to FDR, because this is a relatively recent history, and you see the acknowledgments of faith that he had. It highlights how the left is just so far off base. Here's one quote in a radio address, May 27th, 1941. FDR said, "The Nazi world does not recognize any god except Hitler, for the Nazis are as ruthless as the communists in their denial of God." He goes on to say, "What place has religion, which preaches the dignity of the human being and the majesty of the soul, in a world where moral standards are measured by treachery and bribery? Will our children, too, wander off goose-stepping in search of new gods?" Well, that's exactly what the liberals would love to have today. They'd love to have, our kids going off goose-stepping after new gods. I thought it was interesting, though. FDR is adamant against the Nazis. He says the Nazis are as ruthless as the communists in their what? In their denial of God. Well, what's the Democrat Party doing today? I mean, it's under Clinton putting these judges on the courts who want to make decisions which do deny God and prohibit the teaching of God in schools and prohibit the mentioning of God in schools and just totally taking the First Amendment, which was to prevent the federal government from interfering in state business. And now the federal government's interfering all over in state business, and they are telling the students what can and cannot be taught about God in the class. And by not teaching anything about God in school, you are teaching something about God in school. You're teaching that he's not very important. If he was important, he would be mentioned. And so you are teaching something theological by not mentioning God. So there is no such thing as neutrality. I was so impressed that just last year the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Wisconsin said that atheism was religion. And so there was this case where a prisoner wanted to have a non-Bible study Bible study, and the state law only made provisions for religious time off for study. And this guy sued and went to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, and they said, no, atheism is a religion, so this guy gets to have his little free thinker study. Well, here we have it on paper that the federal court says that atheism is a religion. So when they want to get religion out so it'll be neutral, they're lying. What they're really saying is we want our atheistic religion to be the new religion in the schools. We don't want your deity-based religion that the founders had. But another quote from FDR where he says, "I knew that someday Russia would return to religion, for the simple reason that 4,000 or 5,000 years of recorded history have proven that mankind has always believed in God, in spite of the many abortive attempts to exile God." And I thought, boy, what a way to word that, abortive attempts to exile God. And here today, we have, the main party that claims to be from FDR being the ones to in favor of exiling God. And you look at the polls and the number of professors that voted for Gore, for example, and they never attend church. One of the things I look at when I go through these quotes is try to find ones that talk about church and state. And I found one in December 6th of 1933. And I hear some music coming up. I don't know if it's time for another break or not.
I'm afraid it is, Bill. I have no control over it. It's just we're controlled by the computer. Anyway, our guest is William Federer. We're talking about his latest book, The Faith of FDR. And when we get back from this break, why I want him to get his telephone number, his website out, so you'll know how to get in touch with him. And so, but Bill's books are great. They're inspiring and really, really one of the great assets we have today. In fact, I'm glad he's not in Congress. I'm glad he's out there writing these books. I wish he were in Congress, but he offers so much this way. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is William Federer. And I was just thinking, you know, Bill had run for Congress several times, and God decided that he wasn't going to win. And although he came very, very close, he didn't. I ran for Congress a couple of times myself. You know what? I think that I wasn't supposed to win. I was supposed to do what I'm doing today. And I suspect that Bill is supposed to be doing what he's doing today, and that is, of course, writing books. There will be an inspiration not only for this generation, but for generations yet unborn. Well, Bill, pick the story up.
Well, when talking about church and state, during the Depression, Franklin Roosevelt asked the churches to help, taking care of the needy. And this was one of his quotes, December 6, 1933, addressing the Federal Council of Churches of Christ in America. He said, churches and government can work, churches and the government, while wholly separate in their functioning, can work hand in hand. Government can ask churches to stress in their teachings the ideals of social justice, while at the same time, government guarantees to churches, Gentile and Jewish, the right to worship God in their own way. The churches can at the same time teach their millions of followers that they have a right to demand of the government of their own choosing the maintenance and furtherance of a more abundant life. State and church are rightly united in a common aim. With the help of God, we are on the road to it. And just a couple things there, you know, that he understood that the churches were the ones providing the soup kitchens and, you know, the benevolent, the food pantries and giving benevolence, and the churches were there meeting the needs of the people, and that, the government couldn't do anything. Of course, as time went on, he did have the government step in and do more of the things that was more welfare related that we're stuck with today. But I thought it was also interesting. He says, at the same time, the government guarantees to churches, Gentile and Jewish, the right to worship God in their own way. He was referring to the Christian and the Jewish churches, but he didn't call them, Jewish synagogues. I mean, he's still thinking with the Christian terminologies. I went through and found several different places where he mentioned working together with Christians and Jews. And here's another one of the quotes that he writes about when he talks about it. He goes, there's been a definite progress towards a spiritual reawakening. I receive evidence of this from all of our Protestant churches. I get it also from Catholic priests and Jewish rabbis as well. And that was in January 31st, 1938.
That's all right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is William Federer. And before I go on and before I forget about it, I want you to get your telephone number and your website out so people know how to get hold of you.
Oh, thanks, Dr. Stan. My website is AmericanMinute.com. That's AmericanMinute.com. And a toll-free number is 1-888-USA-WORD, 1-888-USA-WORD.
Now, wait a minute, W-O-R-D or W-O-R-D? Okay, fine.
Yeah, 1-888-USA-WORD.
Okay.
And but it's so important to get these out. You know, to win an argument, you have to cite an authority that both sides respect. So if we're talking religion, and I start quoting from the Bhagavad Gita, I have trouble pronouncing that, or the Quran or some book that you don't believe in, then you'll interrupt me and say, Bill, you know, you can go from that all day long, but you're not going to convince me. Whereas if I pull out the Bible and the scriptures and we talk about it, well, then we have a common thing that we can agree on, and then we can use that to try to convince each other. And it's the same thing in courts. That's why they always have to cite laws, because there's this agreement that both sides agree that on the law, then so they try to use it to sway their... But it's the problem when we're arguing before a secular, unbelieving world, and we quote the Bible, they look at us and say, so we don't believe the Bible, so you may as well be quoting from, you know, Mickey Mouse or a cookbook. And so we have to cite authorities that the left respects to win an argument. And there's not one person on the left that has not been trained to think of FDR as their patron saint. And so if we find out that FDR has said things that are so conservative, so far to the right, especially in the realm of faith, then all of a sudden we can win arguments, and it convinces the other side that, gee, maybe they're the ones that have changed, that they're no longer following the ideals of somebody that has been a leader in their party. And when you read these different statements of faith, you can't help but see this, especially when, you know, here's FDR saying, you know, those forces hate democracy and Christianity as two faces of the same civilization. They oppose democracy because it is Christian. They oppose Christianity because it preaches democracy. I mean, today, somebody on the left would never say that we're democracy and Christianity are two faces of the same civilization. They would not mention Christianity at all. So that's why it's important, and I feel like this book is such a great contribution to the whole battle for faith, the whole separation of church and state debate, because the left either has to admit that they have changed, or they have to admit that FDR was wrong. And either way, it helps our cause. If they say, oh, FDR was wrong, he didn't understand it, I mean, okay, sure. He was a four-time president of the United States. Nobody has been president four times. And he's the leader of, you know, the most visible leader of the Democrat Party in modern history, and you're going to admit that he was wrong? Or they have to say, well, gee, he was right, and I guess we're the ones that have changed, and we're the ones that are wrong. A couple other interesting statements here. FDR said, democracy is the birthright of every citizen, the white, the colored, the Protestant, the Catholic, the Jew. And I thought that's all he mentions. He doesn't go on to talk about the Taoist or the Muslim or whatever. President Bush was the first president ever to have a Ramadan celebrated in the White House, and during his administration to have an Islamic postage stamp. I am befuddled to try to figure out what's going through his brain with this Dubai port deal. You know, I recently read an email that said his brother Neil works with the Dubai UAE people. I'm hoping that's not part of the thing, but with them admitting that they're against Israel and that they will boycott and not allow anything to be shipped out of their Dubai ports if it is came from or goes to Israel, why in the world would our president want to have them controlling our ports? It's off the charts. But
I think that's a question that we all ought to ask. Why is it that President Bush is so determined, to turn over the control of six of our ports to a country that supported the Taliban, his ally Israel? You know, and he is threatened, actually. He, of course, his initial response was, I didn't know anything about it. Shucks, I didn't have anything to do with it. This was made without my knowledge. However, if Congress enacts legislation that says we can't do it, I'm going to veto the bill. Now, that's quite a statement, because George Bush has refused to veto anything. In fact, even the McCain-Feingold bill, he said, if there's any one of six various things in it, six things, I will veto it. All six of them were there. He signed it saying, well, I think the bill is unconstitutional, and the Supreme Court will find it unconstitutional, but I'm going to sign it anyway. And then the Supreme Court found it constitutional. And President Bush had signed a bill he said he didn't believe in. He knew it was unconstitutional. What sort of madness is this? Well, anyway, go ahead, Bill. Don't get me started.
No. As much as I am not a big government person, and I don't think the government should be taking over businesses, I was, in reading through my quote on FDR, I don't think I included it in my book, because there were 4,000 pages of FDR addresses, and I whittled it down to 400 pages. But there was a case where he thought that the Montgomery Ward factories, were making items needed for the war effort. And he thought that they were purposely dragging their feet and purposely going slow and not helping us the way that the war effort, the way they should. So he had the government take over their factories. The government took over Montgomery Ward's factories because he thought, and there were several businesses in the country that were owned or run by German sympathizers or people that did business with Germany, and he had no qualms in taking over the companies. But to have President Bush being willing to let, in the time of war with Islamic states, to give our ports control of them, to me, I mean, it's bad enough giving China control of the canal zone. But I remember reading years back this old defunct theory that the UN had, that their plan for world peace was to have every nation knit together with other nations with treaties and being suppliers in the markets for each other, thinking that in a perfect world, nobody will want to declare war on another country because they were their supplier or their market. Well, Islamic terrorist reasoning throws that right out the window. They have no qualms in attacking anybody for any reason, much less if they're a supplier or a market. I mean, we're the number one market for their oil, and that hasn't stopped them. But back to the items of faith, there's another quote that at a campaign address in Madison Square Garden, 1940, October 28th, Franklin Roosevelt said, "Your government is working at all times with the representatives of Catholic, Protestant, and Jewish faiths. Without these three, all three of them, working together for that great end, things would not be so clear or as easy." And again, he's talking about the three-faced Judeo-Christian. There's not all the other pluralistic type things that nowadays are thrown in there. I also thought it was interesting, especially with Israel being in the news, and it's beyond, you know, it, to me it has to be supernatural that this little itty-bitty country of Israel is the center of the world conflict, 4,000 or 5,000 years after it came into existence. It's back in its exact same spot, and it's surrounded by enemies. But nevertheless, in 1937, Franklin Roosevelt wrote a letter to Dr. Stephen Weiss of the United Palestine Appeal. And of course, when I read this United Palestine Appeal, I instantly thought of the Palestinians. But then as I began reading through this, I realized that for him, the word Palestine and Israel and Jews were synonymous. That Palestine, if you historically trace it back, has always been associated with the Jewish people, even to the old Roman writings. The Romans would say Palestine, the land of the Jews. And so this concept that there is such a thing as a Palestinian is just a brand new invention in the last 20, 30 years. But here's his quote. He says, "The American people, ever zealous in the cause of human freedom, have watched with sympathetic interest the efforts of the Jews to renew in Palestine their ties to their ancient homeland and to reestablish Jewish culture in the place where for centuries it flourished and from whence it carried to the four corners of the world." He says, "It has been 2 decades since the Balfour Declaration, and it says, we've witnessed a remarkable exemplification of the vitality and vision of the Jewish pioneers in Palestine. It should be a source of pride to Jewish citizens in the United States that they, too, have had a share in this great work of revival and restoration. It gives me great pleasure to send my hearty felicitations and warmest greetings." Signed, FDR, February 6, 1937. So he was one in favor of wanting to see the pioneers in Palestine be successful in renewing their ties to their ancient homeland. And that's why today it seems ironic, that Condoleezza Rice was instrumental in giving away the Gaza Strip. She was negotiating, brokering that deal. And, of course, the thing we kept hearing over and over again is land for peace, land for peace, land for peace. Give up the Gaza Strip, give up that land, and then, finally, once and for all, you'll have peace. Well, no sooner had they given up the land than the Hamas took over and says, "Great, now we're going to one step closer to destroying Israel." It's like, wait a second.
Well, you see, nothing really going on over there, Bill. It makes any sense. I mean, the fact that they would have given up so much land already, then they would give up Gaza. They're planning on pulling a lot of the settlements out. And, they can pull back behind that wall all they want to. But with intercontinental ballistic missiles available to so many of the Arab states, there will be no safety there. There's going to be a war. It's only a matter of time. And the only thing that can possibly prevent the annihilation of Israel is divine intervention. I really believe that.
And and again, to think that the whole world, when I ran for Congress, I met with this Muslim guy in St. Louis, and he worked for the government, and I said, well, you know, what issues are important to you, you know, and I'm thinking about taxes or maybe, gay marriage, because he made some comments about that. And when I got, I asked him point blank, what's the number one issue? He says, Israel. He says, we got to get rid of Israel. I'm like, whoa, wait a second. You're in America. You've lived in America for a dozen years. What difference does this make to you? And he's like, oh, no, we have to. So it's I think Pat Buchanan called it a supernatural hatred.
Yeah, that's absolutely. In fact, if you can't understand anything out there, nothing makes any sense unless you see there really are supernatural forces behind what's going on. Even the reconstitution of the State of Israel and the way that they, you know, were able to survive in 48 and then during the 67 war and the Yom Kippur War, you know, time and time again, God has intervened.
And I'm pleased that the conservative and Orthodox Jews are realizing that Christians are their friends and not their enemies. Several have realized that they do have more freedom in a country that has Christian heritage. The way I view it is that the Christian faith has been an umbrella to give freedom for all the other faiths to practice here. In other words, that true Christianity is from the inside out, not forced from the outside in. Where Muhammad spread his faith from the outside in, that you either submitted and converted or you died. And then in the Middle Ages in Europe, the different monarchs thought religion was forced from the outside in. It was only that the people that fled to America, the Protestants from the Catholic countries, the Catholics from the Protestant countries, the Baptists from the Anglican countries, they fled to America insisting on the right to worship God according to the dictates of their own conscience. Once they got over here, they realized that to be intellectually consistent, the same right they were demanding for themselves, they needed to grant to the other Christian groups coming over. So it was basically in America that Christians learned how to tolerate other Christians, learned how to tolerate the liberal Christians, and then the Jews, and then the monotheists, and then the polytheists, and then the atheists, and then finally the atheists decided to turn the tables and kick out the Christians. And so it's Judeo-Christian umbrella, that concept that true religion is from the inside out, not forced from the outside in, is what has been one of the greatest contributions to the world. And that's one of the things that America has given.
Well, of course, this is Israel is under persecution in the Holy Land. So Christianity is increasingly under persecution here in the United States. And you see decision after decision by the Supreme Court to take God and prayer and mention of God and any sort of public Christian display out of public places. They know exactly what they're doing. The tragedy is that most Christians will not admit that there is an active, organized, orchestrated conspiracy against Christianity right here in our own country. And if we don't wake up to the fact that what's happening is not accidental and has nothing to do with the law, it's the fact that there are people who hate Christianity. And some of them have sat right on our Supreme Court. That's the incredible thing. And where is the outcry from the Christians? Oh, my goodness, it's the law. No, it's not the law of the country. And if Congress wanted to change it tomorrow, they could by restricting the appellate jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. And even when the Republicans controlled the Senate and the House of Representatives and the presidency, nothing changes.
Well, I thought you had mentioned the persecution against Christians. It's interesting, in the address, June 12, 1944, FDR talks about the systematic persecution of helpless minority groups in Europe by the Nazis. He talks about the insane desire of the Nazis to wipe out the Jewish race. And then he says, many Christian groups are also being murdered. The Nazis have determined to complete their program of mass extermination. But, you know, we don't talk about it that often, but many Christians were thrown into the gas chambers too, as well as the Jews, the ones that would not go along with Hitler's plans. He had no problem in letting people be lukewarm, but if somebody was actually going to try to live out their faith, like Dietrich Bonhoeffer or Martin Niemöller, they met the punishment. But it is definitely a battle, and I think that when we look back in history and we see some of the struggles that we've gone through in the past, then it can give us encouragement that we can make it through the struggles that we have ahead. And matter of fact, one of the quotes, September 11th, 1941, a fireside chat, FDR said, "These times call for that inner strength that comes from a people conscious of their duty, conscious of the righteousness of what they do."
Well, let's get your telephone number out one more time, website. Bill? Bill, are you there? Well, it sounds like we've lost, I guess, but fortunately it was a good time. Bill, are you there? Well, anyway, our guest has been Bill Federer, and if you want to get in touch with him, why, it's AmericanMinute.org, that's AmericanMinute.org, and fascinating information, we recommend it too. And we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up our program here at the American Freedom Network. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, we've lost our guest. Bill, you're not back there, are you?
I'm here.
Okay, fine. We lost you there for a minute. Okay, we've got about 3 minutes to go. So, you know, let's go ahead and get a little bit more information out. You know, certainly you have this American Minute. This certainly is fascinating. I have one right here in my hand, America's God and Country. And really, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Well, my American Minute website, you can sign up and get a free daily email called the American Minute, short little historical vignettes about what happened on each date in American history. The one for tomorrow I'm excited about talks about the Texas Declaration of Independence and Santa Ana. My toll-free number is 1-888-USA-WORD. That's 1-888-USA-WORD. And I'll end with one quote. Here is 1942 State of the Union Address. FDR said, "The world is too small for Hitler and God." In proof of that, the Nazis have announced their plan for enforcing their pagan religion all over the world, a plan by which the Holy Bible and the Cross of Mercy would be displaced by Mein Kampf and the swastika. So here was FDR saying that the Holy Bible and the Cross of Mercy would be displaced by Mein Kampf and the swastika. And so we're seeing this effort to replace the Bible today with who knows what else. But all these books are on my website, AmericanMinute.com. And again, the toll-free number is 1-888-USA-WORD. And if no one's there, just leave your name and number on the recorder, and you'll get a call back. It's so important, Dr. Stan, to win an argument. You have to cite an authority both sides respect. And that's why if you pick FDR, he is somebody that the left respects. So if we can find him saying, and which I did, 400 pages worth of him saying faith-filled statements, that it helps tremendously. This is a great tool for the listening audience to get and use and give and stump all their liberal friends. Literally, their liberal friends will have to go through a whole psychological analysis after this, because their foundation will be shaken. It's such a powerful book.
And I'm really looking forward to reading it myself, and I think it's so vitally important that people understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization, and we need all of the tools we have, and this is an excellent book. You'll see what FDR said. You can quote FDR, and of course, there are many ways he was sort of a scoundrel. But that's all. What he was doing, of course, was saying what the American people believed at that time, and what I believe most Americans still believe, and that this is a Christian nation and God does rule in the affairs of men. Bill Federer, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do carry many of Bill's books. We carry his America's God and Country, really an 800-page encyclopedia of Christian statements by our founding fathers. We carry his also on a CD. It's even more elaborate than the book. We actually carry his story of St. Patrick and of George Washington Carver, and Is There a Santa Claus? And I'm sure we even carry other books he's written. We have quite a cross-section of Bill Federer's information. If you'd like to know more about it, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Then I want to once again mention the great new DVD we're carrying, put out by Chris Pitto, called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings. That's The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings. 3 hours of video that will hold your transfixed very professionally done. Great music, great scenes, great acting, and then, of course, even a number of interviews, and I have a little tiny segment in that, where we simply try to explain to people the two parallel forces in America. One, the strong Christian. The other, the occult that comes from the dark side that has always been intent upon using America's military and financial power to bring about a world government and really, of course, at this point in time, to plunge us into World War III. And I think World War III is coming, there's no question. And you better begin preparing yourself for the very difficult times financially, fiscally, and spiritually that lie ahead. So, and now, of course, we do hope many of you want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, that you want to get the DVDs or videos on They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version, and at long last, we've got the second hour of the 10-hour DVD, and we'll be sending that out, and we have the complete set coming. So they will be available. We carry Chris Pitto's Makito 1. We carry his Makito 2. Excellent. And then, of course, if you have not yet seen my DVD of the Brotherhood of Darkness, we have it both video and DVD now, and it gives you a good overview of what's really going on behind the scenes. You need to get my story of the plan to kill off most of the people in the world, and people say, that couldn't be true. I don't believe it, and yet, if you don't believe that Jacques Cousteau advocated eliminating 365,000 people a day, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you the pages out of the UNESCO Courier back in November of 1991. You can get my Population Control Agenda monograph. It's up on the internet. Of course, we suggest you get my talk, Planned Population Reduction. We have a video on population control, a 4-tape set. Fascinating information that you need to have to understand how they're harming the American people. If you'd like to know about statin drugs, why, you need to get our book. It's only, I think, $9.95 or something like that. On statin drugs, we have books on death by medicine, death by RX. If you want to know what you can do to protect your health, you need to get Russell Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. That's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. You need to get his book on excitotoxins and learn how they're poisoning our children with aspartame and NutraSweet. You need, of course, to get his book, Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients, because if you or anybody else has cancer and you're going to have to go through the chemotherapy and radiation, you don't want your hair to fall out and get deathly sick and wish you were dead. People who've used his strategies have gone through this ordeal with very little discomfort. So we have all of these books and so many more here. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you're going to get one thing, get The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. And that's The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. And then, of course, pray for America. Pray for revival, because if America doesn't turn back to God, why should God ever bless America again? And lastly, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.